Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today's show, we are talking about part two of the Turbo Machinery design process with the Mythbusters Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz. So in the first episode, they gave an overview of the engineering tools used to design turbo machines and dove into what each of those are. So this episode, we are talking about the accuracy of these tools and whether benchmark testing is necessary, and then the state-of-the-art tools. So let's go ahead and just dive right in. So how accurate are these tools? I'm sure that mistakes are possible, but are the software limitations a part of the software, or are they human input issues?
It depends on the software, right? So there's things where you have to be fairly accurate. You know, most ICA and CFD is reasonably accurate depending on the input of your boundary condition. And you really have to look at what you're trying to accomplish. So finite element analysis, structural finite element analysis is more mature than computational fluid dynamics. And is also the equations that you're solving are fundamentally more linear. And therefore, your expected results are going to be more accurate. You're going to be within a couple percent. If you look at computational fluid dynamics, your equations are, and Rainer referred to that earlier, the Navier-Stokes equations are very, very complex, nonlinear, high-order partial derivative equations. And so these are very equations to solve, and you can get very wrong answers because there's a lot of approximations that are being made and trying to come up with the solutions as far as the turbulence modeling, the boundary layers, the way they are modeled, the fidelity of the model. You really can't go down to a molecular level, right? You can go only to a certain size, and then you have to make turbulence assumptions, steady state versus transient. So there's a lot of places where you can introduce errors. Those are kind of sort of the big ones. If you go to rotor dynamics, that's probably closer to what you'd get in finite element analysis, in that the technology is more mature, you get reasonably accurate answers. But again, garbage in, garbage out. If you apply the boundary conditions wrong, if you don't model the substructure correctly, if you don't have correct values for stiffness and damping of your bearings, and you got wrong answers because you put wrong boundary conditions. And then you get into the little tools, you know, things like how do you calculate thrust? How do you calculate a certain shrink fit on an impeller on the shaft, etc.? So in those cases, it's sometimes the tools are sold that you're happy that you get within 30 or 40%, but that's good enough, right? Because it knows that you're over-designed and you may be okay. The biggest problem is really the garbage in, garbage out problem. Bad boundary conditions give you bad answers. And then when the answer is wrong, not recognizing that the answer is wrong, and that's the lack of understanding of the physics typically by the analyst.
I mean, Klaus, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the problem is also fundamentally the following. What problem are you trying to solve? If you ask a designer to design a new compressor stage that is well within the experience level of the company's database, you probably can for example, on the aerodynamics, you can determine efficiency or head-making capability probably within a few percent without ever testing that thing. If you do the same thing for something that you don't have any reference data, meaning where you're basically operating in uncharted water and really have only your code to rely upon, the accuracy is significantly, dramatically lower than that.
Regardless, I mean, we will always, for a new design, we will always test, right? We may not test every single variation of it impeller, but we will always test something. And so all major turbo machinery manufacturers have test stands for impeller aerodynamics. Usually they have not just one, they have multiple test stands for impeller aerodynamics. All manufacturers have bearing test stands, seal test stands, rotor dynamic test stands. So regardless of the analysis results, before the manufacturer releases a product to the market, there is some testing. And the big challenge is not that, you know, you make a, you go through an analysis process, design something, and then you release something to the market and it doesn't work. That usually doesn't happen. The big challenge is that you design something and then you put it on the test stand and your results is, are way off from what your analysis showed. And then you kind of have to start from scratch and your entire design process is delayed by 12 months or longer because your analysis was wrong in the first place. So it, it usually the risk isn't that much was releasing something to the operator. The risk is more that developments get majorly delayed because somebody in the design process using these software tools just got completely wrong, didn't recognize that it was wrong. And then when you get to the test stand, it's misery.
You also have to keep in mind the following. Let's say you design yourself a machine and put it on the test stand. On a test stand, you're very good at measuring the overall behavior of the machine. What you normally don't get is like precise data on how does the flow develop exactly in fine detail in your impeller or in your diffuser. Because it's near impossible to stick probes into the inside of an impeller to measure what the flow does there. If you have a well-calibrated CFD tool, you can actually get all the data on what's happening in very fine detail within the machine, and you can make that the starting point of improvement efforts. And that is really one of the true uses of CFD, that you can get details that you normally can't get out of test data.
So along with the improvement of CFD and FEA, our test stands have also gotten better. Right? We've got more instrumentation in there. We're doing optical flow visualization. We're doing very detailed transient pressure measurements with movable pressure transducers. Those things go along with the computational tools. And Ryder is very correct in that it's very often the interface, basically the boundary condition into a component. If you get that wrong, then your results are going to be wrong. But that's also the hardest one to really know what it is unless you have good test measurements.
So given that, you know, errors are so clearly possible, how much and what benchmark testing is still required?
Well, I mean, we test when we design, let's say, an impeller or an expander, that will be tested from an R&D, from a research and development perspective, to just be able to characterize its performance. So let's say you develop a compressor stage. Before you can even release that to as a commercial product, it needs to be tested so that you have all its performance data well documented. So, you know, head versus flow, efficiency versus flow, you know, what are the surge limits of that impeller? What is the choke limit of that impeller? All that has to be tested. And so that testing is pretty much standard for any kind of turbo machinery component. But then once you get into the fabrication or the shop order process, so somebody orders a turbo machine and all these pieces get put together, that machine is then still factory tested. And that really depends on if it's a very novel machine or if it's a machine that you've done many very similar machines for, right? So there's the factory testing. The factory testing, if it's a fairly standard machine, then you usually can get away with what's called a mechanical run test for API. That's just a run test. But if it's a more novel machine where the aerodynamics is untested, then you may get into something that's called a closed loop test where you try to validate the aerodynamics, or you do a field test where you validate the aerodynamics. But the testing is still a very, very critical component, not just on the R&D side, but also on the production side.
Yes, and I mean, true improvements usually come if you find clever ways to take your test data, combine your test data with your theoretical data and gain new insights.
Yeah, I mean, we anchor all of our tools frequently using test data, right? So we look at our CFD results Jorge, an impeller, and then we compare that with test results and see how far are we off. And then if necessary, we start fudging our software. I mean, we shouldn't call it fudging, but that's basically what it is, where you start adjusting your turbulence models, or you starting adjusting some of the internal parameters of these tools, or the way how you apply the boundary condition, because ultimately what you want to do is you want to match your test results using your computational tools. But if they don't do that, then you're not matching reality. And so that's a golden, that's why testing is continuous, and all major turbo machinery manufacturers have both research test stands as well as factory test stands for shop order type
And I mean,
machines.
We have to be very clear. A lot of the learning in the turbo machinery industry is from failures. If you go into conference papers, you will find a lot of papers about people who built a machine and it didn't behave like it was supposed to behave. I mean, if we design a machine and obviously I just want to dispel an assumption, very rarely in this industry do you have a machine that goes into the field and has problems there. So the learning is usually on the development test stand, not necessarily on the end user's nickel on a job site. But the fact that you predict something, so you formulate a theory, and then you verify that theory on a test stand, and if the test and the theory do not coincide, that's when you have to think about where do I have to improve my theory. I mean, that is basically the fundamental tenet of how you do science, and we do that in turbo machinery, like in many other fields.
There, I mean, as advanced as we are, there are still many places where you can get it wrong, starting with basic things like equations of state for a gas. There's still errors in those. There's many things where there's assumptions being made, and assumption is the root of all evil in engineering, right? We thought it was going to do this, and that's what usually causes some kind of failure in the process. But I mean, tools have come really a long way where failures in the field are not that common. I mean, they happen, but because, you know, we move technology forward, and sometimes we stretch the limit because that's what the market wants. So failures still happen, but they're not that common in the turbo machinery field.
Okay, so I feel like this question is a little redundant, but perhaps you can expand on, you know, current gold standards or state-of-the-art tools and where new technology is going for better design tools, because obviously these tools have significantly advanced turbo machinery in terms of efficiencies and reliability.
Yeah, and I'm going to try not to mention any specific software tool names because we don't want to advertise anybody. But there are, let's say on the finite element side, there's maybe one or two tools that are used globally by almost everybody. On the computational fluid dynamics side, it's more like three or four different tools. And then it gets into things like rotor dynamics and maybe 10 different tools that are used by different, and almost every manufacturer has their own one. When it gets into other tools like heat transfer and manufacturing specific tools, everybody has their own little tools. The tools, just like the turbo machinery, the tool developers, they're improving their tools, you know, as technology becomes available and also as computers become more powerful. Sometimes the usage of these tools is not really limited by how much physics you can implement into the tool, but how long it takes to actually do the analysis, right? I mean, computational and fluid dynamics, you can run very, very fine gridded models with very large complex geometries, but you're going to be limited by your computational power and how much time you have to wait until you get an answer. And so the problem is there is less the tool, but the computational capabilities. But having said that, all these tools are moving along. On the computational fluid dynamics side, we're seeing a movement from what's called Reynolds average turbulence models to a large eddy simulation, which basically just means that instead of making an assumption on that your turbulence model is like a viscosity It's really where you're actually looking at the dynamics of the turbulence, but that means your entire analysis becomes a lot more complicated. On the structural side, we're looking more at nonlinear effects of materials and dynamics, and those are being implemented, and those are making the models more accurately. And so basically more physics, and the physics is somewhat well known, but the more physics is being implemented as computational tools, as computers become more powerful.
Yeah, and I mean, Klaus made a very good example. I wanted to illustrate that a little bit. If you go to a turbo machinery conference, people will show you different levels of computational fluid dynamic sophistication. The one, by the way, we haven't mentioned yet is that, of course, the flow in a turbo machine is always unsteady everywhere, yet most tools assume some reasonable average of steadiness in the boundary conditions. And that goes right where Klaus said the boundary conditions is something, if you can get that right, even the best tool won't help you very well. But Klaus mentioned Reynolds average and large eddy, and there's another one, direct Navier-Stokes. There are people who actually resolve these equations to the point where you actually theoretically get an accurate solution. However, it's so time-consuming that in an industrial setting, you simply cannot use these tools. So academia uses usually the large eddy simulations, which is computationally very intensive. The industry, in most cases, still use the Reynolds average models that are well calibrated for the problems that they're trying to solve and give you good solutions. So, but that sort of outlines the problem that we're dealing with is how much sophistication do you need to get a successful design, and in an industrial setting, how much experience do you have to judge whether the results that you get from your CFD tools are valid, and what conclusions can you draw from your results?
And how big is your computer, right? I mean, if you have access to some supercomputer at some national lab, then you can run some very, very, very sophisticated full Navier-Stokes analysis to the molecular level, basically, but most people do not have access, nor do they have the money nor the time to do that. And in those cases, it almost turns out that it's cheaper to test something than to actually do the simulation. One quick side comment on that, and that is often forgotten, is the more physics you build into a simulation, the more unstable the simulation also becomes. So, I mean, If you're looking at trying to get converged solutions with finite elements or computational fluid dynamics, and if you build a lot of physics into it, if you don't get the boundary conditions exactly right, then you're going to get either a non-converged solution or you're going to get complete garbage, because the more physics you build in it, the more sensitive it becomes to matching reality. And so that's often forgotten. So, you know, it's kind of a balancing act between what you can do as an engineer, you know, how much more improvement you need, and how much money do you have.
Okay. This was a great discussion. Thank you, guys. Do you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up today?
Yeah, I mean, the last comment on this is that, you know, we always try to squeeze that last little bit of efficiency out of machines, which is great, and the last power reduction, you know, from our drivers, which is great because it makes our machines cost less from an operational perspective and reduces the emissions from the machine. But there's also a level where it becomes unreasonable. And so it's also sometimes an engineering decision. Is it really worth to squeeze that last fraction of a percent out? And how does it affect your operating range and so on? That's also something to consider when you use these tools.
I think the good news for engineers is the following. Despite all these tools, ultimately these machines now and in the foreseeable futures are designed by engineers who have experience. And so these stories that you hear, oh yeah, we're going to replace all these people by AI. I'm very bad at predicting things, but I don't think the inroads of AI will, in the foreseeable future, design turbo machinery. They're going to support designs, but they're not going to be the designers.
Yeah, I agree with that. There, AI is, even in our area, has brought significant advances and made the design process easier, but we're still very, very far away where you can remove the experienced turbo machinery designer. And I hope that stays the case until at least I retire.
Yeah, that is good news indeed. I think AI has caused a fright in some industries. Well, thank you both for your time and for this interesting talk on design tools.
It was a pleasure again. It's fun to talk to you on these very interesting topics. Looking forward to the next one.
As you can see, we're very passionate about this particular topic. So that was a really fun discussion. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you guys always make it fun. And thank you to our audience for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we'll see you next time.